Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, flight now and plane sharing. We talked about this on the show before, but you might have wondered to yourself before, why don't we have something like Uber for the skies? Why don't we have something like plane sharing? And we did at one point, and then the FAA made it illegal. Back in December of 2015, a company called Flight Now was shut down when the FAA determined that it was illegal commercial transport. Joining me to discuss this is Baron Soka, president of Tech Freedom. You know, I was trying to think of a nice insult to start the show, but I'm losing my game on this.
Because you've missed me. I've been away for the last month, and you're just so happy to have me back that you couldn't think of anything unkind to say, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's probably it, really. It's just having you back in D.C., Baron, just the dynamic is just so positive. You know, it's just there's just a great atmosphere around the Tech Freedom office right now. I'm sure listeners can kind of imagine it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Until we do a video podcast, they're just going to have to imagine how happy I am to see you and recognize that my face is matching the words that I am saying.
You'll be even happier when we have more Tech Freedom flair. There are t-shirts coming, just so everybody knows.
And when we do have t-shirts, we're going to have a t-shirt contest. And all you're going to have to do is something simple, like tell us which episode that Baron is not on is your favorite, because we already know that your favorite episode is not going to be one where Baron was the guest.
I'm going to bet it's one of the 15 episodes you've done on Uber with Jared.
Yeah, you know, for the less sophisticated listeners, right?
Yeah, but 15.
Yeah.
15.
Yeah, maybe some of the more wonky people will really love that one we did on Spectrum or something like that, something more wonky. But anyway, why in the first place is there something called illegal commercial transport? So before we really like jump into flight now, just the fact that there's this illegal world. I mean, what does that even mean to have illegal commercial transport?
Right. So it's important to note that the FAA didn't ban Flight Now. What they said is that if Flight Now wanted to operate, that the pilots would have to be certified as common carriers. And that would require a great deal more effort and time and expense and certification than they were willing to do just for the privilege of being able to use what is essentially an online bulletin board to find people to share their rides. So as often happens, when we say that regulation drives someone out of business, it's not that the agency actually officially banned it. It's just that they made it practically impossible and the company went out of business because none of the pilots that might have used the platform were going to bother with that hassle. There's a big difference between being a private general aviation pilot and being a certified common carrier pilot.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the major airlines here. We're talking about smaller flights, smaller planes, smaller airports, a lot of airports that listeners probably never interact with, the type of airport where you'd fly from maybe Boston to Martha's Vineyard, smaller trips that might be a lot cheaper if not for these rules.
Yeah, or the middle of nowhere, Nebraska, to the middle of nowhere, Montana. I mean, this was actually really important for rural America, for people that might live hours from major airports.
Yeah. And basically, to clarify, it wasn't really like Uber, because making money is actually illegal on something like this. All Flight Now was doing was saying to a pilot who's taking a small plane on one of these flights, you can help recoup the cost of your flight by posting online on Flight Now that you're going from here to there. And then other people can join you on your flight and just help defray the cost. You can't profit from it. It's essentially, I'm going here anyway. Does anyone else want to join it? It's very much like carpooling.
Exactly.
So the Uber for planes is kind of misleading. I mean, it's a nice clickbaity headline, and we probably used it a couple times ourselves. But
like really, in the intro today.
Yeah, but really this is just the online version of posting a freaking post-it note on a bulletin board in an airport and saying, I'm going here. Does anyone want to join and pay me like $50?
Yeah, and it's important to note that that's not just an analogy. That's actually how this market worked before and how it's working now. Yeah. In other words, the internet, so before the internet, there were billboards. The internet allowed you to create billboards where you could post, I'm going from X to Y, does anybody want to join? Flight Now just offered a significantly better system for doing that. And Flight Now made the mistake of going to the FAA and asking for their blessing. You know, companies like Uber get criticized because they just go out and do stuff and they the old saying goes, better to seek forgiveness than permission.
Right.
That's what Uber and Airbnb have done. FlightNow is trying to be a good corporate citizen and tried to do the opposite. They went to the FAA and said, "This, we don't think this is common carriage, but we just want to make sure that you agree." And they got an answer that they didn't want, which was that this is common carriage and the pilots would need all those more complicated certifications. And that essentially drove the platform and its competitors as well out of business.
Yeah, they immediately announced. I mean, it wasn't, you know, 3 or 4 days after, you know, they basically said, this is it, you know, we're done. It was basic cause and effect. The FAA says that you are a common carrier and they're out of business. And the hilarious thing about this is that things like how many Facebook friends you have play into this, and whether advertising on Facebook is the same as advertising on a bulletin board. I mean, really the FAA is just struggling with the fact that something that happened in the physical world is now happening in the real world. Because you are a lawyer, can you explain this term common carrier and why it's important in the context of flight in general?
Yeah. So the easiest way to picture this is think about Game of Thrones, right? So you're wandering around Westeros and you're in a kind of medieval environment, and you know, it's like you're out, you're crossing these rivers, you've got ferrymen who are taking you across the river. You come upon the ferryman, does he have to carry you? Right? Well, the answer is yes, because he's a common carrier, right? If you are in the business of taking people, all people, across the river, that's what common carriage was for, right? And Game of Thrones is actually useful because it helps you picture the medieval world in which this law developed, right? It's a pretty faithful depiction of what that world was like. And you can understand why we came up with a legal doctrine to ensure that when you got to the ferry, that the ferryman didn't just charge you whatever he wanted, right? Because he's there to serve everybody. The point is, the distinction between the ferryman and other people who might be in professions that look sort of similar revolves around that point. Do they hold themselves out to carry everybody, or do they reserve some discretion about whether you're going to do business with them? Well, you know, so the innkeeper in common law generally is a common carrier, right, for that reason. But other people like the armor maker, right? They're not common carriers, right? They decide whether they want to take a particular client. And there are all sorts of people in between. And the point here is that general aviation today is not a common carrier business, because if you're a pilot, you decide who you want to take with you, right? If you get a certification, you can take your friends with you, you know, your family, whoever you want. When you post on a bulletin board and say, I'm flying from X to Y place, does anybody want to go with me? You're still not a common carrier. You're still making a decision about who's going to get in the plane with you. And if someone responds to your ad and you don't like them, you don't think you want to spend 3 hours with them in the plane, you don't have to.
Yeah. And the very important point here is that FlightNow carried that over into their platform. So in the physical world, a pilot can say, for whatever reason, when we're talking about general aviation here, we're not talking about major commercial flights, they can just say, I don't like the cut of your jib. You're not coming on my plane, or you weigh too much, or whatever.
Or I don't think I'm going to be able to fly safely in a small plane with you interfering with me.
Yeah, any reason at all. And FlightNow integrated this into their platform. It was up to the pilot's discretion. So now we're getting to this legal issue of, how in the world did the FAA determine that a platform like FlightNow, which gives the complete discretion to the pilot to say who's coming on their plane, and it is merely an internet version of the thing that was already happening and determined to be legal, how does the FAA just decide that all of a sudden FlightNow is a common carrier?
Right. So the FAA comes up with this test where they say something like, oh, okay, sure. We understand that if you message a few friends on Facebook, that doesn't constitute holding yourself out for common carriage. And if you post about it and you only have a few friends, that doesn't constitute holding yourself out for the public. But if you have too many friends and you post about it, then you're holding yourself out to the public. I mean, it's this weird concept where suddenly you've crossed a line just because social media works too well. And they take the same approach to FlightNow, and they say, well, that to us, that looks like common carriage. Even though, again, the pilot still gets to decide whether they actually want to take people.
As would the pilot on Facebook too. Like a bunch of people message the pilot on Facebook exactly. In response to his ad. He doesn't have to take them. There is no mechanism in Facebook by which they are forced to accept the customer.
Right. So in Game of Thrones terms, I mean, maybe I'm pushing the analogy too far, but
no,
you know, if you go up, well, we haven't overplayed Game of Thrones on the podcast yet.
No, although we haven't.
Maybe we should.
I like it.
Right. So if you go up on the tallest tower in Westeros and you cry out, you know, I'm going to be taking people on this journey. Does anybody want to come with me? If you still get to decide who's going with you, the court in that medieval court, that medieval mentality that we're trying to get inside the mind of by using that analogy, is not going to consider you to be holding yourself out for common carriage unless a lot more things happen. I mean, if you are every day running, let's say it's not just a river crossing ferry, but let's say you're running, you know, you're going from one island to the other and you do it every day and anybody who goes up can buy a ticket. Okay, then, yes, you're a common carrier. But just saying, I'm going on this journey, does anybody want to come with me, doesn't make you a common carrier, right? That's an incredibly important point to understand. It's been the case literally for 800 years in Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence. So that's the first big legal issue here, is there was a clear definition of what a common carrier was and where the line was. The FAA rejected that, and they came up with their own test. So then you ask, okay, well, how does the FAA win in court? And that's the second legal issue, which is that we on the podcast have talked repeatedly about this idea of courts deferring to administrative agencies and how problematic that is. This is a really clear example of where it's problematic because, number one, the practical consequence was terrible. They drove out of business this platform that could have helped a lot of people, especially people who don't happen to live in big cities, who really would have benefited from this sort of general aviation coordination service. But more fundamentally, what's really going on here is the DC Circuit, the Court of Appeals where this went, had a choice. This issue's come up in the other circuits. And most of the circuits that have looked at it have said, hey, if the allegedly ambiguous term at issue in the statute is one that is defined in common law, we the courts will not defer to the agency. That's, in my opinion, that's the right rule. Now, the agency argued that it wasn't subject to that rule. The court agreed. The court also did not follow the minority rule, which is what some of the other circuits had developed, where they said, well, we're going to give the agency some deference, but not great deference. It's not clear what that means, but whatever that test actually means, that's not what the DC Circuit did either. Instead, the DC Circuit essentially just said, no, we're going to give you normal deference that we give to agency interpretations of their own rules. And that is why the FAA won here, even though they were breaking with 800 years of Anglo-Saxon law.
Yeah, so just to recap, you know, FlightNow was operating. They had done some business. They asked the FAA for guidance to make sure that they're acting correctly, and the FAA has now created a perverse incentive, which is in favor of the Uber model, where you just go into a jurisdiction, guns blazing, don't give a crap about what the regulations are, get a lot of customers, and then use the customers as a political cudgel to badger lawmakers into acceptance. Very aggressive capitalistic mindset, which some people find off-putting. FlightNow said, no, we're doing well, we're doing fine, but we're kind of unsure about this legal gray area. Let's go ask it the question, are we a common carrier? Now, when there is ambiguity, like you say, the courts do often get deference, but this is not a new thing. Am I a common carrier? Like you said, this is a well-established concept that goes back 800 years. And instead of just using that definition, the FAA said, we're going to make rules, essentially. We're going to create a new test on what a common carrier is in the context of this. And how insane is the other incentive they've created where make sure you don't have too many Facebook friends if you're a pilot, because if you do, you're a common carrier. But if you're a loner and you only have a couple friends, well, then congratulations. Go ahead and operate.
Yeah, and I should explain, just in case listeners are wondering, how Facebook is connected to FlightNow. So they're totally separate platforms. The court discussed the Facebook example as an analogy.
Yeah, because like it's an online bulletin board.
Exactly. Just as the most salient example. In other words, the point here is it's not just FlightNow we're concerned about. It's potentially now, as a pilot, not only can you not use Flight Now because it doesn't exist, but if you share on Facebook with too many friends, that also could be considered common carriage. And that maybe that means that the platforms like Facebook are going to feel pressure to start screening posts. Although that's another issue we could talk about. But at a minimum, it means that those pilots are going to be afraid that they themselves may be required to get additional certification. So as often as the case here, we talk about this with the sharing economy, there's the question of what is the platform's responsibility, as well as what is the individual user, in this case, the pilot's responsibility. And both of these are problematic. And the FAA has major legal weapons to use against both. It's worth noting just one point about the dynamic here. One of the reasons I suspect that Flight Now went to the FAA to get their permission is that this is a different circumstance from what sharing economy companies deal with, where Uber and Airbnb are not dealing with federal regulators. They're dealing with state and local regulators, and they have a lot more leverage. They can play them off of each other in a sense. They can say, well, you know, if Austin doesn't want to offer an environment that works for us, we'll leave. And that generally pressures cities not to do things that drive them away, Austin being the extreme example. By contrast, one of the problems with federal regulation is that the federal regulator holds all the cards. And it's hard to imagine how a company like Flight Now could not have tried to get some comment from the FAA. In other words, they probably weren't just trying to be good corporate citizens. They probably felt compelled to do this. And the point is that as the sharing economy grows into other areas of service, into things that are regulated by the federal government, like say OSHA, right? I mean, think about, you know, sharing your power tools, right? I mean, the federal government's going to have a lot to say about that because that's something that's regulated by Occupational Safety and Hazards Administration, right? So the point is there are all these other examples where the approach we've seen in the early phases of the sharing economy isn't going to work. There are going to be other companies who I suspect are going to also run into the buzzsaw of the federal regulatory system. And if the courts will defer to the regulatory agencies in their interpretations, a lot of these companies are going to be out of luck.
Yeah, and back in December, as we said, the court ruled the way it did, which we think is incorrect. Flight Now shut down. This summer, Tech Freedom and the Cato Institute filed an amicus brief in support of Flight Now's suit against the FAA. And basically, we're asking the Supreme Court to fix the error of the lower court. They should not have given the agency this deference because common carrier is a well-established thing. And there are other questions this raises, too. We've talked about the fact that Flight Now was okay because the pilots weren't making money. How about, God forbid, they make money off of this? I mean, one of the reasons I clarified that it's not Uber for planes is because you cannot make money off of it. This is not going to be some giant commercial enterprise. And that's probably what hurt Flight Now. One of the reasons Uber is successful at beating back regulations in places like New York City is that you've got an army of average people who use your service who will get pissed if something happens to it. But in Flight Now's case, it was a lot of pilots. That's one segment of the population. It wasn't a lot of average people using it yet. They hadn't gotten big enough to get that kind of leverage. Right. So it was kind of unfortunate.
And frankly, the people who would benefit from it most are people who are out in rural areas, who are not yet able to exercise their voice and their influence in Washington the way that elite people in cities can by using the internet and social media.
Yeah, and even if this lawsuit is successful, right, and even if there's a legislative fix, Mark Sanford, a representative from South Carolina, has language out there that would essentially legalize Flight Now's business model. So whether it happens through the courts or whether it happens through legislation, that doesn't address the problem of making money off of it. And this industry will not take off, so to speak, unless you're allowed to make money.
That was a pretty plain pun.
Jeez. See, now we're off the rails to use a train metaphor, which is completely inappropriate. But Barron, where do you see this going? I mean, are you confident that the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of Flight Now? We can't really say much on the legislation because as far as I know, that's not happening in this election cycle or the prospects are not exactly great.
So there are three sort of fixes here. So number one is the legislation, as you explained. Number two is we've asked the Supreme Court to look at this, and the specific legal question is, do federal, or for that matter, regulatory agencies in general, get the kind of deference they normally get when the ambiguity at issue is a common law term. And I think we have a pretty good argument. Again, most of the circuit courts that have looked at this have said no. If this case had been brought in some other jurisdiction, the answer would have been that flight now is just fine. Which just, by the way, highlights the fundamental importance of the D.C. Circuit, right? We often talk about the D.C. Circuit as on the show, and it is true that it is the second most important, if not right now the most important court in the country, because the Supreme Court is essentially deadlocked. And it's worth noting that, you know, if you don't follow what goes on in D.C., you may not know, but one of the big constitutional moments in the last few years was that the Democrats, when they controlled the Senate, were able to end the filibuster on judicial nominations. And they, in other words, they have set the requirement now so that you only need 51 votes to get a judicial nominee through. And they did that in order to put four more judges on the D.C. Circuit and thus shift the balance of power in favor of people who want to give deference to government, right?
Yeah,
that's what happened here. That's why Flight Now lost.
And we've seen the D.C. Circuit rule against us in other cases, like net neutrality. So it is.
And it's exactly because of that big shift that's gone on in this court, which is just to say that, you know, whatever you think about the big picture of American politics, on the judiciary, the lines are pretty clear, right? One side of the argument wants to defer to government, and the other, generally speaking, does not. It's a little more complicated than that at the Supreme Court, because actually there are Democrats like Justice Breyer who have been very skeptical about Chevron deference and have been concerned that it's essentially undemocratic because we're giving federal agencies the discretion to do whatever they want. But so that's the big picture fight. And that's the third thing I was going to say, is that whatever happens at the Supreme Court, whatever happens in Congress, ultimately, this case is just one example of the big picture fight that we're engaged in about how much deference do agencies get. It's the exact same issue we're facing in the Open Internet Order case, where the issue isn't really net neutrality. It's the federal government, the FCC, going to get to do what they want. That same issue is going to come up again and again and again. And it's possible the Supreme Court will further limit the deference that agencies get. As I said, I think there's actually a bipartisan support for that. But it's also worth mentioning there's legislation that's pending in Congress right now. It's called the Separation of Powers Restoration Act that would deal with that issue. That is probably not going to pass anytime soon, but it should. And it's something that would do a lot more than a lot of the things you hear about that would limit around the edges what federal agencies can do. And before we leave this subject, I just have to share with you just one quote from a Ninth Circuit case that just was decided yesterday. So again, it was the same issue, basically, how much deference do agencies get? And you had this really unusual circumstance where you got, this is the biggest circuit court in the country, so there are a lot of judges. You got 10 judges on that court, which is not a majority, but it's pretty close to it, to dissent when the majority refused to grant rehearing on this basic issue. And there's one footnote in that is, to me, the funniest footnote that I've seen in a court decision in a long time, where the issue was, well, that there was a circuit split on the question at issue, and that's why the thing should have gotten full review. And the minority said, circuit split perhaps does not fully describe the resulting state of affairs. It is more like we have spun out of the known legal universe and are now orbiting in some cold, dark corner of a far-off galaxy where no one can hear the scream, separation of powers. In other words, Congress is no longer making decisions. It's the executive branch and executive agencies, because the court is simply allowing the executive to tread upon our elected representatives.
Yeah, and it goes in political issues, but then it goes in apolitical issues. I don't think anyone sees Flight Now as a political issue. It's just people who want to see this business model succeed up against the FAA. It's not a left-right divide. It's really a divide about who has authority and who's making laws. And we'd like to see Congress setting these kinds of policies rather than the FAA.
And my concern is just that if Congress thinks they can pass a one-off fix for this, maybe that works. But it's not going to fix the next problem. And this is going to keep happening again and again until the courts start standing up to federal agencies.
Well, next time you're wondering why you can't take a small plane to a nearby general aviation airport, think about Flight Now. Think about the lawsuit that Tech Freedom has filed a brief in, and think about the legislation that's pending. And maybe through one of these avenues, we'll get to see Flight Now, and then maybe we'll actually get to see a real Uber for planes, where you sit outside your house and you call a plane. That would be kind of cool.
And Uber for everything else. All the other things that are not taking off right now because of regulations like this.
And not taking off because of plane puns. We'll leave it there. My guest
has been... Am I grounded now?
My guest has been a plane man himself, Baron Soka, president of Tech Freedom. Baron, thanks for coming back to D.C.
Thanks for still being here when I got back. I wasn't sure.
Oh, don't take that for granted. Next time, you'll just be seeing ghosts. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. media@techfreedom.org is our email. Find this podcast on the iTunes store, where you can please leave us a review, because it will help others find the show. I saw one funny review that said this show has a strong libertarian bias. I have no idea where that comes from, but I will work on that. Getting more diverse viewpoints on the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.